You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday! Woo, we made it through another week, and we are here to talk about the Pacers, of course, on this edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, I am one of the hosts of this show, Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And today, we have a fun one, kind of, because this was supposed to be a weird episode where I talk about, the Pacers play the Timberwolves, and we'll preview that game, but they literally just played them Wednesday. So it was going to be kind of dumb. It was just going to be, who played well? Cover that guy, you know. Is Karl Anthony Towns going to play? But then, randomly today, the Timberwolves were like, nah, screw that, we're going to make a trade and change up our roster so that it's totally different and very confusing to read into that first game. So somehow the Pacers, playing the same basketball team twice in 3 days, are playing a different team. But we'll get to that in a second. Actually, no, I should start there. So because of that trade, you know, the Timberwolves sent out Jeff Teague and Travion Graham for Allen Crabbe to the Hawks. They're looking at ball handlers, supposedly trying to get D'Angelo Russell. But right after it happened, Kevin O'Connor, the lovely man from The Ringer, dropped a nugget about the Timberwolves trying to get Aaron Holiday. So I'm going to talk about that too. And then at the end, I'm going to talk some nuggets with the SB Nation Denver Stiffs writer, Gage Bridgeford, one of my friends from college. So it worked out really well for the whole show. So we'll start with the Timberwolves tonight. So, like, looking at the game these teams just played, right, the Pacers really played great defense. And it didn't look like they were going to early in the game, right? The Timberwolves got off hot. They got 30 and 29 in the first two quarters. 59 at halftime is terrible. And, you know, their defense wasn't awesome in the first half, but nothing like, no shot the Timberwolves took in the first half, you know, or not a individual shot, I guess, but never there was a stretch where, like, oh my gosh, they're just giving up all these horrible shots, and if they had scored 120 playing the way they did, it would have been really impressive. It would have just been some ridiculous shot making. Robert Covington mainly hit two or three really tough contested threes, and Derek Culver hit a few tough ones in the lane, and all, you know, like, wow, the Timberwolves offense looks great. And the Pacers didn't really struggle necessarily in offense in the first half. They had 54 points at the break. They actually scored more in the first half than the second half, but their defense just was, like, the final output was bad. And then in the second half, it all balanced out. The Pacers offense played about the same. They had 54-50. The Timberwolves finally, you know, stopped making the contested shots and went 59 in the first half, 40 in the second half, and that's your game. So nothing about the Pacers' game plan seemed wrong. In fact, they just, with no Towns, right, Gorgui Dieng and Noah Vonleh, and who's the other center? Naz Reid for the Timberwolves all played kind of a carousel in the center rotation. Sabonis just killed all of them. So McMillan just kept throwing him in, and Cat's not going to change that, really. The Pacers should be able to keep doing that. But the trade will not affect that. So that is something that I think can carry over from one game to the next, right? Swapping out Teague, a point guard, and Graham, who plays on the wing, although it's probably better suited to play kind of a tweener forward role, is not going to affect the level of involvement Sabonis can have. And it's not going to change their big man rotation unless Cat plays. So Sabonis should be able to crush this Timberwolves team again. And Miles Turner only played 22 minutes because Sabonis was playing so well. You can call that the right or wrong decision. From the 3-minute mark in the third quarter till nearly the end of the game, Turner didn't get in at all because Sabonis was just wrecking and they had no answer. Like, if you look at the Pacers plus minus with all these guys on the floor, which admittedly, for an individual is a bad stat, but if you view it as a representative of how did the Pacers do with Sabonis on the floor, they outscored the Timberwolves by 21 in a game that they won by 5. So they did very well with him in there. He shot really well. They couldn't really defend him. So he'll be important again. And really the whole starting five did well. Jeremy Lamb, only 9 points, but shot over 50%. Brogdon shot 50%, had some clutch buckets. TJ Warren had a big third quarter. Like, they just got enough from all those guys. And then on the second unit, you know, they got enough from everybody there. McDermott shot really well. McConnell and was creating for everybody. Aaron Holiday was not very good, but actually, neither Holiday brother is very good, but they have matchups they can exploit. And then you look forward now, you know, that most of those should still be there. But really, Teague was one of the better Timberwolves to me in this game. in this first game. He only played 19 minutes, but he hit half his shots. He had 5 assists. The Timberwolves actually outscored the Pacers with Teague on the floor by 4 points. In fact, Teague, who they sent out in this trade, had the highest plus-minus on Minnesota for this team in the game. So now that's gone, and they didn't get a point guard back. They got a shooter, and they need those. You know, they hit 11 of 28 threes, which is pretty good. That's like almost 40%, but that was with Covington hitting ridiculous ones, and Bates Diop, who's a terrible shooter, hit 2 of his 3. Vonleh made his second of the entire season. Like, they had some fluky three-point shooting to even almost get to 40%. So the Timberwolves really need a guy like Crabb, but at the expense of Teague, who is, like, the best initiator on Minnesota, seems weird. And Graham, for his part, Trayvon Graham is a textbook role player, but, like, he can kind of defend and capably shoot. So it's an interesting trade for the Timberwolves, but I think it actually helps the Pacers from a matchup perspective. You know, they've been okay at chasing shooters in the second unit, especially Justin Holiday. And, you know, Crabb is just, he's a good shooter. He's a great shooter, actually. Guys are really afraid of letting him get open. But I think they can neutralize him, and he's not a good enough defender that it makes it worth it for this matchup. And that's if he even plays, right? He just got switched to another team. Who knows how much he's practiced and things like that. So we'll see. But that trade, I think, weakens them for this matchup against the Pacers, against maybe another team where they can get enough creation from some of their wings to potentially use Crabb a little better. That's not as much the case, but I think against the Pacers it might not be good, especially, you know, they haven't had time to acclimate to chemistry. It's in the middle of sandwiched between two games with the team. It's going to be interesting to see how this Timberwolves team looks different. But if Cat doesn't play, right, you have to think they're worse. Just even if Crabb was the literal perfect fit for this team, and it's the thing they've been missing, and they won't miss Teague at all. Like, if this trade is a home run for Minnesota, just like having one day to throw a guy in, you'd think they'd be worse than they were 2 days ago, unless Cat plays. So I think this one's going to be a nice, easy Pacers win, right? They know how to beat this team. They literally just did it. They're at home. The other team doesn't have their star. It should be an easy win if Cat does not play. Now, if Cat does play, he averaged almost 30 points a game against the Pacers last year. He's one of the most efficient offensive players, right? He would increase their scoring output on fewer possessions. Like, that's just a good player. Then maybe you have a different discussion, but I doubt they would. You know, he is sick, like Dane Moore told us earlier this week. So maybe if he's over his sickness, he'll play. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like if he wouldn't play in a home game when he's really close to back that he would play in a road game. But what do I know? We'll see. If he plays, he's the X factor, and we'll see how that goes. But I think the trade makes the Timberwolves worse, and the Pacers literally just beat that team. So they're playing the same team, but a worse version of it at home. You got to think they win that game. So, yeah, Pacers win. That will get them to 27-15. Pretty impressive to be 26-15 at the halfway point. By the way, I'll have an article about the Pacers at the halfway point out in the morning for those of you listening at night, and it's already out if you're listening in the morning. But now, let's pivot. Let's talk about this Kevin O'Connor drop about Aaron Holiday being attempted to be traded for by the Minnesota Timberwolves. So, wowee, what a bomb from KOC to come in and drop this. It's not like a bomb, that's the wrong word, right? Like, we've heard about, you know, maybe Aaron Holiday was included in these talks for Conley, and other teams inquired about him last year at the deadline. And they were turning teams away, apparently. I don't know. I think Kevin Pritchard denied that part, but there have been scuttlebutt about the Grizzlies' involvement, and I heard a little bit about that too. Anywhom, so this is the exact tweet from Kevin O'Connor, just so everybody who hasn't seen it knows the language I'm going off of here. It says, quote, Minnesota isn't done making moves after dealing Jeff Teague. The Wolves have been in talks with teams in search for another ball handler, per league sources. They recently went after Pacers point guard Aaron Holiday, but those talks went nowhere at the time. So I don't know what that at the time doesn't seem like an important caveat. Like, it's not like they're suddenly going to explode unless Timberwolves willing to offer a lot. So here's why these trade talks are interesting to me. Right, we love Robert Covington here on Locked On Pacers, but I don't think a small market team, A, or in general, Aaron Holiday for Covington, B, is necessarily a good move, just because I think you have to make the ceiling play with Holiday. He's been really good at times this year. Like, he could be awesome for the next 5 years for the Pacers. And I know Covington has a great deal, 2.5 more years. He'd fit really well, but I think you have to make the ceiling play as a small market team, especially with the guy you drafted. And then the other stuff on Minnesota, they're not going to give up Culver for Holiday. That's backwards, especially in terms of ball handling. Okogie's probably not enough for Aaron Holiday. So there's just not, like, a great asset fit. And gambling on a future pick for Aaron Holiday seems like you're going in the wrong direction, right? You pick the guy, you hit on the pick, and then you trade him for a pick that you might hit on. Like, the asset fit is really hard, and that's why I think those talks went nowhere exists, right? Like, say they inquire, Minnesota says, oh, what are you thinking you're wanting for Aaron Holiday? The Pacers get back to them, and then Minnesota's like, well, damn, never mind. We can't meet any of those needs given our situation. Like, it doesn't seem like the best fit is there, and it's interesting that they circled around to him, right? Is he the level of guy they're wanting? And what could, you know, if the Pacers really could get an over the top guy, like, would that trade make any sense? But no, they didn't go anywhere. So I think that says a lot about how they value Holiday. And we've known this for a while. We've heard reports and stories about, you know, the front office really likes Aaron Holiday, and I think that they should. This year he's won them a few games as a sophomore, and he's at times looked like their best bench scorer, sometimes even the best scorer in their starting lineup. He's distributing better when he's actually thinking about doing it. His defense has always been capable enough, and he's a good dude. Like, all this stuff is like, yeah, you keep that guy, he's a sophomore, you let him grow. Point guards take longer to develop in general. Like, all the signs say he's going to be really good, or at least pretty good. So I get why they're turning him down, and the Timberwolves aren't a good fit. But it is interesting teams continue to inquire about him if the Pacers were really sending signals of no, no, no to everybody. Like, why does every team think they can come back and get him? That's so interesting to me. Is it all conjecture? They just see TJ McConnell killing it in the second unit, and they're like, oh, maybe this guy's available. Or I don't really know. But it seems like the right fit for a Holiday trade is hard to find given his low salary, and given that it's hard to value him, especially for a smaller market team. So I think I just thought that was very interesting. And I think, you know, if Minnesota, a team with Culver, a top 10 pick coming up, and a Kogi and Covington, you know, if that team is as bad as some of those trades are fit-wise for the Pacers, if that team can't make an offer that gets anywhere with the Pacers, it seems like it's going to be hard for any team to get Aaron Holiday before the trade deadline. And I don't think he's available, like, at all. In fact, I'm pretty confident that he's not available. I think that we can read somewhat into this. You know, the list of teams that have inquired about Holiday is long, and the talks that have gotten anywhere only possibly involved Mike Conley. We didn't even know that to be true. Those might have gotten next pretty early. So this is kind of telling, just with a bunch of micro stuff, like, oh, they don't value him this way, and they think they can get more for him, and they really value him. So I thought it was interesting stuff, and I think it's good that the Pacers decided to turn that down. I don't think there was any good transaction fits personally either. So Holiday will stay, of course. Okay, so that's all the Timberwolves stuff I got. I think the Pacers can beat them tonight. Nuggets on Sunday, and the Nuggets are really banged up, and they have Michael Porter Jr. just balling for them, and I wanted to learn more about him since I didn't get to talk about him much last time we previewed the Nuggets. So stick around after this break, and me and Gage Bridgeford from Denver Stiffs, the SB Nation site for the Nuggets, will talk about some Nuggets. So before we hop in to this Denver Pacers talk about segment, I want to talk to you about MyBookie. MyBookie is, of course, our favorite place to talk about for betting on here, because it's absolutely the best right now. Literally, the football championship games are better than the Super Bowl, best weekend of football for actual football reasons. The Super Bowl is just this great show. But the football reasons, this is my favorite Sunday in the league. Between that and the NBA in full swing and college basketball starting, bet on the home Big Ten team. You'll win free money every time. It's time to get involved in the action with MyBookie. If you join MyBookie right now, they will match your deposit halfway all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you can get up to an extra $1,000 in free money. Who doesn't love free money? Just enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate that offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA at the time of deposit. Take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer and let them know that you came from us. All right, Nuggets on Sunday. Which should be fun in Denver. First night of the infamous Denver-Utah back-to-back. I have no idea how the Pacers are going to try to sneak out those wins. And normally, when they play the same opponent twice so close, I don't do two guests because you already know what the Nuggets look like. You just saw them play. But one, they had possibly the best individual performance above expectation of all time against the Pacers, or of all time, this season against the Pacers last time these two teams played. I want to talk more about that player, Michael Porter Jr. And two, they have quite the injury report headed right now. So I guess they have merited
a whole segment here. So with me, writing for Denver Stiffs, the Denver Nuggets SB Nation site, Gage Bridgeford. And Gage and I were friends in college. So Gage, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be here.
So of course I wanted to start with MPJ, but I'm not gonna, because some big drop from Shams and, the Nuggets athletic guy, Nick Kozmider. I might not have said that right. Jamal Murray is going to miss a few games with an ankle injury, which is a pretty big deal. He played not great, but pretty well against the Pacers the first time. So what's the Nuggets plan with him out? Who's going to start in his place and all that stuff?
Morris is going to start. That's what's going to happen. Morris is Malone's like third favorite player behind Mason Plumlee and Nikola Jokic.
In that order?
Have you ever watched a Nuggets game?
I have watched.
Mason Plumlee's minutes are about as constant as death and taxes. Like, he is going to get on the floor every single night for the same amount of minutes at the same rotation every single game. But no, so Monte Morris will start in his place. He's a pretty good fit with Jokic, honestly, because he's really good off. He can play off the ball as well as on the ball. As you talked about with TJ, he does not turn the ball over at all. I think he's got like four turnovers this year, but, so he'll be the starter. He's a good knockdown shooter, can play off of Jokic. So it's a pretty good fit there. You don't see a lot of minutes with him. And then you'll also see some PJ Dozier minutes, who he played really well last night against Charlotte, but most teams play well against Charlotte. And then he'll play against Golden State tonight. So he should have another probably 20-point game, I'm guessing.
He's a two-way guy, right?
I believe so, yeah. Him and Bol Bol are the two-way guys.
Yeah, I saw he had 12 points, I think, against the Hornets, and he got the post-game interview with Kitty Wins, which was cool. I love those one-off stories. That's interesting. You know, I like Monte Morris quite a bit. I like that, you know, like I said with TJ a few weeks ago, that just never turns the ball over. And on your second unit especially, that's really valuable. You know, it's harder to hemorrhage points as a second unit when your point guard literally never coughs the ball up. But with starters, that's a whole different story. So we'll have to see how that goes. But it's interesting that he plays well with Jokic, and I thought it was crazy that Jokic had zero assists the first time these two teams played, and they still had 124. So clearly it didn't really matter. They'll have to clean up the offensive rebounding. But yeah,
man, I was going to say, those offensive rebounds is what did that game in, because like the Pacers kept that game close for a long time. And that's something that the Nuggets do every single week or every single game. Like, you watch, they will keep it close for much longer than they should. Even that Hornets game last night ended up being a 14-point game. It was really close for a while, and then they just kind of pulled away in the second half. But they play close, and that's how they lose games to like the Hawks. Like, I was going through it today. They've lost to the Hawks, the Pelicans, the Wizards, the Cavs. They've lost to a lot of bad teams because they just let
the Pacers have lost to three of those four teams. So
and the difference is, yeah, that's like, I think the best teams don't drop games to bad teams. And if you let good teams hang around, you're going to get beat.
Yeah. Yeah. Those offensive rebounds were killer. And they had like two or three possessions under 5 minutes to go in the game where they got multiple on one possession. And there was one possession where Will Barton, I think, got the third offensive rebound and eventually scored. And I've never heard Chris Denari like be so, it's so hard to be a broadcaster and like be excited about trying to come back, and just everything's breaking the wrong way. I've never heard Chris Denari so deflated in my life. It was quite the
offensive rebounds can just deflate a team. Like the Pacers have a good, well-coached unit and a well-coached team. And they just, every time an offensive board went to Denver, you just saw the entire defense just lose all of its energy. Like another one, one.
Yeah, it was brutal. And another guy who got a few of those offensive rebounds, Paul Millsap, just missed a game. He's dealing with some left knee stuff, and he's old, so it's even scarier when they're dealing with stuff like that. Oh, really? So he might be out for a little bit.
I'm not really surprised. When I was looking ahead to like the Nuggets regular season, I was kind of expecting them to get him some rest anyway. Granted, I didn't really expect it to be because of injury, but I just think it kind of works out. He was playing among the starters. He's playing the least amount of minutes. Jeremy Grant has been getting more and more minutes this year as he's gotten more integrated in the rotation. He didn't play Wednesday, and then I believe they played on Sunday. He missed that game as well. So Jeremy Grant's going to be the starter there, and he – And I think that that is a big disadvantage for Denver, because Jeremy Grant is a good defender against wings, but he's not super great against like bigger guys, because he is pretty long. He's pretty long and skinny, and he can get overpowered by guys like Sabonis or Turner. So I'm not really sure what the plan is going to be to defend those guys. I know they're not going to start Plumlee and Jokic. It's going to be Jokic and Grant, but it's going to be interesting to see how they try and defend Sabonis, or if they just say, you know what, Sabonis, you can go have 40 and we'll try and shut down everything else.
Maybe they could try Jokic on Turner so he doesn't have to move as much. But then, yeah, like you're saying, Jeremy Grant's on Sabonis, which that's not going to go as well. Or they could flip it, but then you're kind of stuck wasting Jeremy Grant's perimeter defensive talent. So that's a tough one. Gary Harris, I think, is close to returning. I'm not going to ask too much about that.
Yeah, he's got a groin injury. He's out tonight. He missed last night as well as the game before that. I think he missed the game before that. So he could be back for Sunday. They might just be resting him, saying it's a back-to-back on the road. Let's just bring him back on Sunday. But, right. I mean, he was listed out early in the day. Last night it was a game-time decision. Today they had him listed out in the morning, which is why I kind of think it might be he comes back again either for that Pacers game or sometime next week.
And we're going to see all the Nuggets. We're going to see the guys down the real end of the bench if all these guys can't go. Well, you know what's funny is I was just looking. I'm on their Basketball Reference page right now. And if you know, they sort by minutes per game in the per game section. So I'm looking at some of these guys that might play. I don't want to talk about them necessarily, but like Torrey Craig and Juancho's here. And then MPJ, who I want to talk about, is at 13th. So he must have had a ton of fluff games where he played like 2 minutes that I didn't know about. But now that is not the case. He is firmly in the rotation. I actually was fortunate enough to catch a quarter of the Nuggets game a few nights ago when he was balling again. So MPJ, guy I really liked in that draft, making me proved right. And you know, that's all me and TJ talked about, is I liked him as a prospect, and he's had some moments, and then he had his like the moment against the Pacers, of course. That 11 for 12 game, 25 points. His only miss was like a ridiculous fadeaway from the corner, nearly a three kind of shot. And
it was a three, actually.
It was a three. Okay.
Yep, it was listed as a three. I got his game log pulled up.
There you go. And then he just had 19 against the Hornets. I caught some of that Clippers game is the one I was talking about, where he had 13. So he looks like a player all of a sudden. And where did this come from?
Where it came from is getting him regular minutes. Like, if you go and look at his game log, he's got a few games. Like, against Cleveland, he played 3 minutes. He has multiple games with less than 6 minutes. He's got a bunch of DNPs, and those DNPs weren't from injury. Those were because Malone didn't want to play him on those nights. Like, he didn't play against the Lakers. He didn't play against Houston or Dallas. And that's in the Houston win, where they won by 10. He didn't play against Washington, where they won by 13. Malone is has put a lot of emphasis on defense this year, and he's basically a rookie. I don't care for the whole – he's not a rookie because he was in the league last year.
No, he's a rookie.
But I know. I'm just going with the – yeah. But so he didn't play at all last year. He doesn't really know defense. He's always been an offensive guy. And if he made early in the year, like if you go and look, a lot of his games where he didn't play a ton – were earlier in the year, where if he blew a defensive assignment, he was yanked and you didn't see him again for the rest of the half. And if that happened in the first few minutes of the half, you weren't going to see MPJ until the second half. Malone just doesn't like defensive misses, and Porter was having a lot of them. But the reason his offensive explosions have kind of happened are just when he gets the chance to get into a rhythm, there's not a lot of guys that can defend him one-on-one, especially on a lot of teams' second units, which is who he's going up against, because his like speed and burst of the rim is just, it's really incredible stuff. He's also really active around the basket. He averaged per 36 minutes, he averages 9.5 rebounds.
Wow.
So when he's on the floor, he's active, he's going towards the rim, and he's going after boards. And then he's converting those into buckets because the guy's 6'10", so he has to jump 2 inches off the floor, and then he's dunking.
Right. Yeah, that's what, like, we're obviously being facetious, but, like, we make a bunch of KD comparisons from that Pacers game when he was 11 of 12 because there's this 6'10 guy who's just making jump shots from all over the court. Like, how the heck do you stop that guy when, you know, if he jumps as high as he can and you jump as high as you can, you're still 4 or 5 inches away from properly contesting the shot. And Some of them were tough. Like, that's why it was so impressive. He had, we talked about his miss being a fadeaway. He had a couple tough mid-range shots that he made. And when it's like that, he just has that Durant about him. And I know he's not that good. You know, he's still shooting like, what, 40-something percent on the year, but maybe not even that. Oh, well, he's 54%. Look at him. Yep. He's over 50. Yeah.
Well, it helps when you shoot 75%, nearly 76% at the rim.
Wow. So which, that's again, the key. Is that tall, the key? Just keep him away from the basket, or is he just going to bury you with these mid-range insane
games? From mid-range, he's all right. Like, he's shooting – he's only taking 8 shots from 10 to 16 feet and 16 from 16 to 3-point. So – and Malone doesn't like those shots from anybody that's not Gary Harris. Well, honestly, basically everybody that's not Porter. Like, the rest of the starters can all take those mid-range jump shots, and he's okay with it. But if Porter rises up from there, he's not a huge fan of it. But then again, the Pacers don't really have somebody that can check Porter.
No.
On a consistent basis.
Justin, like, Holliday's a little try, but I'm not sure that's going to work.
He'll try, but even then, like, there's been I've seen a number of, like, good defenders try and guard him this year, and if he gets you, like, he can, because he can rise up and you have to contest it, because he will take those shots over the top of you, which that's almost what you should do if you are the Pacers, is just say, okay, well, if you can rise up over me from three and hit it, I'll let you have it, but I'm not going to let you get to the basket, which is why Miles Turner could be really important for this game. But I also, Miles isn't, like, he's, for a center, he's really mobile, but he's not quite mobile enough to stick with Porter, who just plays with a ton of energy when he's on the floor.
Yeah, they might have to try something else. You know, I don't anticipate him being that good again. You know,
I highly doubt he's going to put up 25 on 12 shots again. But
yeah, with like, what, 2 free throw attempts or something?
Yep, 1 for 2.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't see that happening either. I think that is a ridiculous expectation. But at the same time, you know, like we just talked about, they don't really have the perfect guy to guard him. So they might have to just slightly change something. You know, I think when Jokic is out, it's easy. You just scoot a big over a little farther and be ready for the pass to Plumlee. But when Jokic is in, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to get creative with ways to guard him. And I'm looking forward to see how they do it. All right. I don't know if I want to talk about anything else, because the last time they played, the Pacers really played okay. Just could not get rebounds worth a damn. So I think they got a shot, especially with all these guys out for the Nuggets. But ultimately, Gage, I don't think they're going to win.
You know, I think it just kind of – it depends on what, like, Nuggets team comes out. Like, if Jokic comes out and is aggressive and goes at Turner, I think he's the type of center that can give Turner trouble, kind of like we've seen Embiid do a number of times in the past few years. But the problem is Jokic has also been really, really passive this year. Like, I don't know how much Nuggets basketball you've watched this year, but when he can come out and put up 10 points in the first 5 minutes of the game, just because when he wants to, there's not really anybody that can stop him from getting to the basket. And if they try to, he's just going to draw a foul and go to the line. But it's all, so I think if those three starters do miss the game, I think that there's a realistic chance that Jokic comes, or that he does come out aggressive. Because if he comes out passive, I just don't see – I don't see them winning. I think the front court is going to be kind of an issue with – and also, Denver hasn't been extremely dominant at home this year. Like, they've been obviously better. They're 17-5 versus 11-7 on the road. But last year – let me see. Like, if I remember right, they went 34-7 at home last year. Wow. So they're 2 losses away from – matching all of last season, and this team is hypothetically better based on adding Jeremy Grant and development from Porter and those guys. So Denver's like home court advantage is still realistic, and if they get out in transition, which I think they could with these other guys in, because Jamal Murray works really well in the half court, but guys like Porter, Torrey Craig, who you mentioned, who I think will start on Sunday if Gary misses again, because he got the start last night. He'll probably get it tonight, I'd have to guess. Those guys work really well in transition, especially with Jokic like hitting them on the outlet pass. So I think, honestly, I'm going to pick the Pacers to win this game.
Wow.
That's just my feeling. I think that Denver is – they're not a super great shooting team. I looked at their stats the other night. When they lose games, they're the worst 3-point shooting team in the NBA in losses. Like they shoot like 28% from three in their losses this year. I think the Pacers have the length to contest those threes. The Pacers aren't the defensive juggernaut that they were. They're still good, but they're not what they were at their peak. What was it, 2 years ago when they were number one in defense?
They were number two years ago, and they were top five or something last year. They're like ninth right now, I believe.
Yeah, so I think – so they're not what they were 2 years ago, but they have a ton of length between Brogdon, who is way too long. He's so good and yet so not flashy that it makes perfect sense why he plays for the Pacers. Like, he just does everything. He's like Monte Morris at the next level of Monte Morris. Like, he takes care of the ball, sets his teammates up, plays really fundamental basketball. I think the Pacers win a close game because I don't think the Nuggets get as many offensive rebounds as they did in the last one. And so I think it ends up being like a less than 5-point game, and I think the Pacers end up winning by like four.
Well, there you go. That would be a 4-game win streak for the Pacers as they begin their embarkation on a long West road trip. I disagree with you. Even without those guys, I think the Nuggets can win. Just Jokic has that much gravitas, and they still have good players. They're still a deep team. I like that parallel me and TJ guys to talk about for a little bit, where they both have a bunch of quality guys on the roster and they can kind of get through injuries. So as long as Jokic plays and the Nuggets are at home, which one of those two things is guaranteed, I think the Nuggets are going to win. Gage, where can people follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me on Twitter at GBridgefordNFL. I realize this is an NBA podcast and I cover the Denver Nuggets. And I remember on one of your mailbags, you called me out for having an NFL Twitter handle.
I did.
But for... when I'm not covering the Nuggets, I cover fantasy football for a couple different sites. I actually have my debut article for a site called Dynasty Nerds. So for any of you that play Dynasty Fantasy Football, hit me up for that information. I cover regular fantasy football for other stuff. And then I cover the Packers because I'm originally from Wisconsin. So I cover that. So I cover a little bit of everything. And you can follow me on Twitter at GBridgefordNFL. I actually have a Denver Nuggets column coming out tomorrow morning.
Ooh, well, there you go. Check that out. It'll be this morning for those of you tuning in right now. And yeah, I DM Gage for fantasy football stuff all the time. So feel free to hit him up if you need that kind of help next year, because I sure did. I got fourth in all three of my leagues. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll be back Monday in a tired show, because we'll be talking after this game on the middle of a back-to-back, but we'll preview all next week and recap all the stuff that happened this week. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you next week.